And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two at the races as we recap Derby 148, Oaks 148, and everything else that comes with it, and always one of the most enjoyable conversations of the year, the opportunity to talk to the winning owner or trainer or jock, anybody connected with a Derby win. In this case, it's Eric Reed, who I've known first. I got to know his parents, and then later Eric, and we basically were sweating out the opportunity to get into the Derby, and at the last minute it looked hopeless, and then the next thing you knew, it was miraculous. Eric, congratulations to you and to Sonny and Rick Lawson, your whole team, just unbelievable.
Thank you, man, thank you. Can you believe this?
No. I'll say right off the bat, I did not put a nickel in. At least Marty McGee did, who you've been friendly with forever. But I basically was sweating along with you getting the horse in. He looked terrific, Eric. Every day on the racetrack, that 59-2 work, he was bouncing over the racetrack, and you were telling anybody that listened, if we get in, he's live.
Yeah, and you know, they thought it was crazy because they just look at the numbers and they haven't really watched any of his races. I don't think anybody paid much attention because he broke his maiden in a maiden 30. They forgot he just ran the $600,000 race and was third and flew by two of the Derby horses that were already in the field after the wire. So, I'm telling you, I've got some guys sitting with me right now, and one of them, after taxes, cleared 80 grand, and a couple of them made more than that.
I said as we were going to the break, I didn't hear yet from Jammer. What did Jerry bet?
I'm not allowed to disclose that information. You're trying to get me taken out. So, but no, Jerry, he got on me pretty good. He said you didn't, you know, give your wife enough credit. She's the secret weapon of the barn. And I said, man, you know, I was so worried about my dad falling over on me that, you know, if she was hiding from the press, I said, I tried my best to remember everybody, but every time I did anything, I had to turn around and look for my dad to make sure he's still standing. And Jammer said, well, shut up and give her some recognition. So I want everybody to know my wife does do all the work around here.
There's so much about this that we're going to flesh out, but I do want to start with your dad. And you know, your dad, I know, has had some heart issues, and a few years ago was kind of in rough shape. And but you're the one who ended up on the ground in the paddock.
I know, I scared him to death. Steve, we were watching, you know, and in the middle of the turn, I knew he'd kind of gotten in the mix. And I had my best friend, Ken Tyson, standing beside me, my dad in front of me. And I said, Kenny, I can't find him. Where's he at? And he said, you just dropped to the rail. I think you're fifth or sixth on the rail. And then I saw him, and he was coming up near the eighth pole. And I grabbed Dad. I said, hey, we might hit the frickin', well, you know what I really said, but I said the board. And he went by Messier so fast, and I could see him reaching and his stride getting longer and longer. And at that point, I was like, oh, my goodness. And then I heard Ken Tyson go, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And that's when he took the lead. And I grabbed Daddy. I said, Dad, we won the Derby. And next thing I know, I'm on my back. I didn't even see him cross the wire. Didn't even see him cross the finish line.
I was watching mid-stretch in one of the pillboxes, and when he came in, there was that gap in between where Epicenter and Zandon were rallying, and you know, were basically, you know, moving, and through the gap, I saw the two on the saddle cloth, and I knew it wasn't Happy Jack, and said, "This is Rich Strike," and I was like, "Oh my God! I mean, he's gonna win this race," and you've obviously had the chance to watch the replay. I just tweeted actually that overhead of the late portion. What discussion did you have with Sonny, you know, knowing you were going to be in the 20 hole? Talk about what, you know, what went on. You know, you didn't have a whole lot of time or days to really consider, you know, how this might unfold. So what was the discussion Friday night and into Saturday?
Well, I told Sonny, I said, you know, I'm a great trainer, Sonny, and I got you a great post position. All you got to do is drop over and pass 19 horses. And he said, don't worry, boss. Richie knows how to do this. But, no, our plan was to, by the quarter, you know, leave the gate. We had a quarter mile to get as close to the rail as we could to try to save some ground. And, I mean, within five or six jumps, he just immediately started taking him to the rail, and he got a great spot. He had some horses by him when he went by the wire the first time, which got him aggressive. And all Sonny did is what Sonny's done for me for the last 2 years, which is why I rode him, because, you know, what you saw Derby Day, we see every day when he rides at these tracks. He's a great rider. He never panics. He thinks things through. He doesn't get nervous under the gun, and every lane he chose was the golden lane.
It's right in front of me on the screen. I'm just watching that. To me, and I mentioned this earlier, the thing that was amazing, this was not like, not to take anything away from Calvin Burrell, but this was not like the Street Sense rail run or the Mind That Bird rail run, because he actually had to check up a little bit. He had to at least idle and wait for that seam to reemerge. And that's what was so impressive. I mean, he could have easily been shut off right there. And, you know, then he maybe ends up, what, probably third or fourth.
Yeah, I mean, he had, you know, things went great. But Sonny made, he told me, I said, did you see Messier backing up? And he goes, yeah. He said, for a minute, I thought I could get on the inside. And then I thought, no, I got way too much horse. I'm going around. And he told me, he said, Eric, when I got to the head of the stretch, I thought I was going to win. He said, I thought I was going to win. And he said, the middle of the stretch, I knew I was going to win.
Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. And I'm watching it again. And then when he swings right around and through, and at that point, he's got that opening. And in the meantime, Epicenter is busy holding off Zandon. Just remarkable. Let's talk. Eric Reed with us, of course, to relive and to absorb, because it's only 48 hours, and you know, you didn't sleep Saturday night into Sunday morning. Then you greet the media Sunday, and that'll continue. And you still, of course, have to, you know, prepare him. You got him back to Mercury, and you know, going to prepare him for Baltimore. We'll talk about that in a minute, but I want to back up. Let's talk about Rick Lawson, what it means to him, the identification of this horse, and plucking him out of that 30.
Well, it's Rick Dawson, and Rick's a great guy. He had just been in the business a few years, and he had some things that just, you know, didn't go right. He was on the verge of getting out. A mutual friend of ours, Pete Chereau, said, before you do, he said, send one of those horses to Eric. Just see if he can make you happy in the game. So he called me, told me the situation he was in, and he was in a weird spot. So we sat down, we talked. I explained to him what he probably needed to do to get out of, you know, what he was doing and make things work. He said, well, how do I get some horses? I don't want to go spend $2 or $3 million when I've already had this kind of bad luck, and I don't know what this business really is doing. And I said, well, let's go claim a few, have some fun, try to win some races, and you'll see if you can tolerate this. And I said, then we'll go get some young horses, some two-year-olds, try to claim something that's Keeneland or Churchill that might have some potential down the road, maybe get an allowance horse or at least get one worth of money. And I said, in a few years, you'll kind of figure things out, and it won't be that big a deal. So the first two-year-olds we went after was Rich Strike and another horse, and we got out shook on that one, and we got the right one.
Amazing. You had talked about how you saw him improving, and you've also mentioned that you don't think you've gotten to the bottom of him yet. And, you know, certainly if we look at his sire, if we look at Keen Ice, who got better, you know, obviously peaking in the Travers, you know, two-thirds of the year through, one thing I wanted you to discuss, you said that he's put on weight after each of these starts, which is quite something, and then you fold in the synthetic efforts, which is only going to leg a horse up even further. So this was kind of a perfect storm.
Everything went right, and you know, they say to win the Derby, sometimes you're going to be the best horse, you got to be the best horse on that day. And I'm telling you, a week out, I figured we were going to be the best horse on the day. It was just, were we going to be able to pass that many horses? And I know people think we're crazy. I'm not a trainer ever says, oh, yeah, I'm going to win. I can win. In my heart, I thought it's not impossible to win, but it's probably unlikely. But right. That was only because of the trip I know he was going to get. But potential-wise, I truly believed if things went right, he could be a threat. And you know, he trained great up there. He got better when he got to Churchill. And he came out of that race, he was just crazy. I mean, not in a bad way. He ate up all his food by 9:30. He was standing there wanting everybody to, you know, pet him. And he wasn't tired. He wasn't in the back stall with his head down. We loaded him up the next morning, brought him to Mercury. He was rearing up, shadow boxing in the stall. I mean, it's crazy how good the horse is doing.
And he commonly described as a good feeling horse.
Yeah, and he's kind-natured. I mean, what happened with the Outrider pony at the end of the race has drawn a lot of attention, but it's people that don't really understand. And, you know, Richie had never had a horse pick him up after the race like that. And he had just passed two of the best horses in the country right at the wire, and he was in Mike Tyson mode. I mean, he wasn't looking to punch. He was looking to knock out. And he's galloping out. He ran by everybody. He looks up. Here's another horse. So Richie's like, well, I got one more to beat. And the guy reaches over and grabs him and slows him down. I'm sure it made him mad. He just, you know, he's mad at the horse. He didn't understand what was going on. And, you know, once he got him off of his horse and he got bit on the leg, he got bit on the arms, the poor Outrider, I mean, I feel bad for that guy. But he saved my horse from being injured, maybe losing the rider and getting loose, which would have been, you know, horrific. So, you know, if people don't know what went on there. They think somebody did something wrong. And that guy paid a heavy price to keep my horse's rider on his back and to take care of business. And you saw once you got him turned around and galloping back, he went back, he accepted the roses like a champ. He never did anything wrong again. He was just in warrior mode at that time.
Well, and I touched on this briefly as we were heading to the break, and Eric, I'm glad to hear you, you know, explain that. And you know, the lay public, they're going to think whatever they think, and it's too bad it wasn't addressed better by the NBC broadcast. But you know, Greg Blasi is going to have to turn the pony out. Pony's tore up pretty good, and Sonny told Greg, he said, I can't help you. And Sonny at that point was also, you know, having just laid out what he expended energy wise. I mean, he was, but let's understand, you know, the total circumstance here. So it'll blow over. Greg Blasi, as I said earlier, the best outrider, pretty much anywhere in the game. And this was an unusual situation. I want you to talk, Eric, and I don't want to put you in emotional mode, but there's a lot to this story. And I posted that the entire day between you and Jason Cook, there were so many harmonies over the course of the afternoon about horsemen and people that were born into the game, devoted to horsemanship and the equine life and the racetrack life. And that includes you. And it includes overcoming an epic tragedy. And, you know, 6 years ago at Mercury and the fire, the devastation, and you weren't sure that you had the wherewithal to continue.
Yeah, I tell you, it's we had a rough patch, you know. We had a rough patch. From the fire to losing my two assistants to my grandson, there's a lot of times I didn't want to do it anymore. But, you know, everybody convinced me not to, to go out that way. And we stayed in, and by the grace of God, I'm talking to you today with a Kentucky Derby winner, not just a Kentucky Derby starter, a winner.
That you know, that's what the game that's what the game can do. Talk about Herb and you know, growing up on the shed row.
My dad drug me out of bed at 4:30 in the morning when I was 6 years old because I liked horses, and he said, "If you like horses, this is what you got to do." And you know, he thought he would deter me. Well, you know, I loved it so. I'm 12 years old. I'm going to school with straw in my hair because I would go to work with him, and then somebody would take me and drop me off at school, and the kids would make fun of me, and we played Little League Baseball, and I'd have to leave practice because we'd have to go to the races, and the coaches would get mad at me. He worked me hard. He was hard on me. He never cut me a break, and he's the happiest, fun-lovingest, jokingest, crazy guy in the world. And never let you get the last word, makes everybody laugh all the time. But he was serious with me, and he wanted me to understand how hard this game was going to be. And sent me away with two horses. He said, "You wanted to be a trainer? I got you two. Good luck." I didn't even have an apartment. Didn't know what to do with myself. 18 years old, 19 years old. And the other day when he choked up being interviewed, the guy that makes everybody laugh, the guy that is the crack joker, you know, man, it made my whole life complete.
When did your dad stop training?
He stopped training, gosh, it's been a while now, probably over 10 years. I tried to get him to come out here and just help me. He was bored. And I said, "Come out and just watch the babies in the barn. You don't have to stay any longer you want. Just come out, hang around these horses, pitch in. Give me some advice, whatever." He said, "You can call." He goes, "It's like a drug, Eric. If I go back out there," he said, "I'll be wanting to get another one." And he said, "I want to enjoy some time fishing and relaxing." He said, "I paid my dues." And it took me all this time to get him come back to the races.
Wow. Do your folks still have Rabbit Run?
They still have Rabbit Creek. It was full this
Rabbit
week,
Creek.
Actually. Barbara Rhodes people, Connection, stayed there. So he called me. He said, "Well, I got somebody staying here that's got won the Derby." And he said, "I guess he's going to kick your butt." I said, "Well, he probably will, but I said he better watch out down the stretch." But, he had a little bragging rights Sunday morning.
Well, you know, and I met your folks. My first Derby was 2001, and I had friends that stayed at the B&B. It's in Versailles, right?
Yes.
And my friend stayed there. So Sunday morning after the Derby, drove over to Lexington and went to see them. And in fact, John and Donna Ward, I forget how, I think maybe your dad took us over by the Wards. Is that possible? Am I?
Yes. Yes, he took people everywhere. He'd take them to all the big farms and give them tours, and he would drive around because he knew everybody, and he'd call and say, "Look, I want to bring some people over and see the place. We won't bother anybody." And he could go anywhere he wanted.
Unbelievable. Just amazing. When it comes to you and Jerry, didn't you, I think you trained that filly that he named in my idea with the jelly cable, right?
That's correct. Yes. Yes. Jelly cable. he's on a naming roll right now.
Well, he did it, and he let me know because he heard me on the show talking about the, remember when the jelly cables, which is part of the synthetic surface, the poly track, and it was, the jelly cables were, and so I made fun of jelly cable, and he named a nice Sky Mesa filly after that, and I remembered that, you know, she came your way. She won a couple times.
Yes, she did. She was all right. I mean, gosh, about everything I get for Jerry, we win with. It's he just likes to win, and he doesn't matter what track, what level, and he loves his horses, you know, and it makes it an easy job for me.
Well, and for those that anybody that plays the game, that's a player of any kind, you've seen, you know, Eric's name for a long time, but most notably the way in which you took on Zenyatta with a couple different mares. I mean, that was, you know, that was certainly the one of the last big big spotlight opportunities for you.
Absolutely. We've had our run with some good horses, and I think Jerry's probably taken my career to the point where I ended up getting Rich Strike, to be honest with you. We did well everywhere, but we never got on that kind of stage until I got with Jerry, and he's put some pretty good horses in my barn, got me my first graded stakes winner. We're the only one until this week, but we had a number of grade one and two placings. And that day that we took on Zenyatta was a thrill of a lifetime. And he told me the other night, he goes, you know, you're a head or a neck away from upsetting, having the two biggest upsets in horse racing. And
that's true.
Right.
That's a great point,
right?
Because because between Satan's Quick Chick and Rintervol, and you also had Lemonette, right? Lemonette was one of those.
Yeah, Sweet and Flawless was grade one or two placed. She ran fourth in the Alabama. She was he's had some really good fillies.
Well, and Lemonette, because of the, you know, the Lemon Drop Kid, she was a turf. She was a turf mare,
yeah.
No?
All day long, mile and a half.
Yeah,
mile three,
that's
eight.
What I thought. Yeah. Well, and that just shows. I mean, it shows you can really capable with any, you know, with any kind of horse, turf, dirt, and obviously long too. I mean, how many? Talk about that a little bit. I mean, in terms of the long windedness, and we can kind of swing this back around to preparations over the next 2 weeks with Rich Strike for Preakness, and. You know, this is a race, Eric, where a lot of people get to Derby, and once they know they're in, they kind of ease off the gas pedal. And one of the things I talked about coming in on, you know, through Friday was making sure that your horses were, your horses absolutely as fit as possible. I mean, I picked Simplification because Antonio Sano is a guy that does not take the foot off the gas. I mean, talk about preparing a horse for the mile and a quarter and, you know, making sure you've got one that's fit. And then all you have to do is look at the way he came home with that sub-25 final quarter.
Yeah, you know, he's a horse that when you breeze him, I've spaced his works out 10 days or more between works. I don't like to breeze him every 7 days, kind of the assembly line way of training. And because I've watched him, and by day 8 or 9, this horse gets real good after work. So I ran him in the Jeff Ruby, and I set myself up a schedule where I backed up 10 days from the Derby and 10 days from that. So he had to work at Keeneland. Worked nice, comfortable 48, just getting his first work back in him. He went back to Churchill, and I gave him a good work and didn't have company with him. That's when I knew we were really doing good, because he worked faster than any of those horses, and he didn't need a prompter. And he did it under wraps. I mean, he went 112, went out 25, and was still wanting to go. So I gave him the day off the next day, and we went back to the track the second day. He was a tiger. And I said, Gabriel Lagunas did a great job with this horse. He took off riding races for 2 weeks to gallop him, breeze him, he said, I'll ride races the rest of the year. I want to stay with this horse. He owe him a lot for getting me through this Derby. He filled in for Sonny, and he didn't get hardly any of the credit, but I tell you, he worked him, he galloped him every day. But he told me, he said, Eric, he's so fit. He goes, what do you want to do? And I said, if we slow down, he's gonna be hard on himself. We just got to keep going. Let him train himself. And if you watch him, he'll go the first half or three quarters in a gallop, and then he hits. I mean, we timed him days galloping around the track in 2:14 at a gallop. That's what he was doing. I mean, he trained hard, and he loves it. He thrives on it. He doesn't like to let the foot off the pedal. So we let him kind of train himself.
Well, obviously, to perform this way, and clearly, you know, this track, you know, he gets over this track particularly well.
Absolutely. Those big turns and the long stretch help him, but he likes the surface.
Well, he's 2 for 2, Churchill.
Absolutely. And they called me from Belterra and said they're going to ride a non-3 next week that I want to run. I said, I think I'll skip it.
He got something in my well. And, of course, you were prepared. You were prepared. The, you know, the plan B was the Peter Pan coming up on Saturday, the traditional prep for the Belmont. Let's get into what lies ahead. I did see where you said in the press conference and to Gary Yount on the notes team, you'll just gallop him up. You won't work him between now and Preakness. And what, you'll head over there next Monday?
Yes, that's what I'll do. You know, I'm going to probably give him 3 or 4 days here, just a few more days at Mercury. And if all's well, I'm going to go back to Churchill, finish the week out. Maybe Monday, let him go a quarter mile down the lane or 3/8 at his speed. Just to make sure his mind's refocused. And then I'll head him on up to Pimlico. But all this really is going to come down to how he acts when he gets back to the track, because he's a prize fighter, man. He's always ready, but sometimes, you know, the tank's not full. I'll know it when I watch him train, because I've never ran him less than 5 weeks, I don't think, apart. So 2 weeks is going to be a big deal, and, you know, we want the Preakness. We would love to have a shot at immortality with the Triple Crown, but we only have one rich strike. We don't have 10 or 15, and we're not going to get 15 or 20 more at the end of the year, so... You know, we know the Belmont's a race that we should be ultra competitive in. The Preakness shortens up. The turns are different. It's 2 weeks turnaround. So if things aren't exactly right with us, we've got to really think what's best for him. And that's how I'm going to make my decision.
Well, we'll watch. And I mean, from every indication here, you know, 48 hours out, everything's been good. I mean, he hasn't missed a note.
Oh, no, he's done nothing wrong. He's trained. He came out of the race great. He's not – I mean, he was done eating at 9:30 the night of the Derby. I couldn't believe how quick he cleaned his tub up. And he's felt great since he's been here. He's a kind horse in the barn. He stands there, and he loving all this attention he's getting. I've been getting texts and emails that he's not Richie. He's America's horse. whatever he is, he's always Richie to me, but I hope he turns out to be America's horse. We need something like this in the horse business. So maybe he can get to the Preakness and we can keep this thing going, you know?
Exactly. I imagine the Rick's phone and your phone, anybody already talking about, you know, potentially, you know, he's a son of Curlin. Has there been that conversation here already in terms of some interests?
No conversations. Yeah, we're trying to get through this first 48 hours and have some fun before the business has to come back. And tomorrow when he goes to track, business gets back to normal for us. So, but yeah, we've already discussed that. And we know there's some value there now being the Derby winner and being a son of Curlin and the way he finished and how strong he finished and how strong he galloped out and what the future could hold. So we got a lot of discussions left.
What other media? Where else are we going to see you here after today's show this morning at ESPN in the last hour? What else has been knocking on the door?
I've got all day. They're going to give me the key to the city and Versailles. Somebody said and have a parade. I don't know.
Did you last night? I mean, Saturday night was one thing, but now, you know, after a while, you get to go home. And what have you and Kay, you know, talk about just, you know, the couple of quiet moments that you've had and, you know, the things you've been thinking about and, you know, and I'm
we
sure.
We talked about all the nights at Mountaineer Park driving home. We talked about Kathy Polymart, my all time favorite horse, who's just a starter filly, but when she won her 6th or 7th in a row, and we were at Beulah Park of all places, and how nervous we were that she might get beat one day, and how you know, how far this game has taken us. I mean, we had some great memories, and we still do. So this is just going to go to the top of the list for sure. But, I mean, we know where we came from, and we know where we're probably going to still be. So we just want to make everything – we want to make this fun, happy. We don't want to stress.
Good, and you shouldn't. You know, one note that I did see that I'm sure some people have asked. Your dad Herbie was quoted as saying how you knew how to put on a spider bandage by the time you were eight. Explain to everybody what a spider bandage is.
Well, we used it on horses' knees. You'd put the big sheet cotton around the knees, and you put your medicine on there, and then you would tear it, like 6-inch tears on each side of the flannel, and you would start at the top, and you would make a knot, and you'd work your way all the way down the bottom, and that way it gave the horse a way to walk and be flexible without rubbing the knee, but it also, it was protection and kept the medicine, the liniments on these horses that had some arthritic knees and stuff or cuts or anything like that. And there's not many people, you know, who even make one today, let alone put one on. But, yeah, he taught me, like I said, he taught me early on everything, every day. I was soaking it like a sponge, anything I could learn.
Well, to take the first claimed horse to win the Derby, the first AE to come in and win the Derby, obviously lessons well taught, and all roads and all the flat tires along the way led to just an amazing result on Saturday, Eric, and I you know how happy I am for you and for Rick and Sonny, and you talk about the groom too and his father, because there's another father and son race tracker story.
You better believe, been on the track forever. Jerry, his father, Jerry Dix Sr., and I, we've been around this thing about the same amount of time, and Jerry Jr.'s been with me for a couple of years, and man, he loves this horse, and this horse loves him, but he's kind and quiet. And he has so much pride, and I've seen pictures of him hugging that horse, making me cry after the race. So, man, they both, it's just a wonderful story all the way around, Steve. It really is.
Eric Reed, everybody, and your Derby winner, your Preakness favorite, and a story that you just can't make up. That's what this game, that's why this game is so special and just unlike anything else. There's no lifestyle like it. There's no sport. There's no betting endeavor like it. And it's days like this and results like this that keep us coming back and trying to find the next 80-1 shot.
Never give up, baby. Never give up.
Exactly. The perseverance involved as well. Eric, I can't thank you enough. I will see you in Baltimore.
All right. Thanks so much. I appreciate you.
Not at all. Eric Reed, everybody, and Rich Strike, and Rick Lawson, and his participation, of course, and his ownership, and the selection of the horse. They thought that he just had, there was something there, and obviously something was there. A Derby winner in the waiting. We're going to bring in Brendan Walsh next too, and Brendan with a terrific weekend, and his it's funny, I mentioned I ran into Brendan Walsh. I ran into him, I guess, on Wednesday, and I'm going to kid him about this. Now, I'm also going to give it to Ian Wilkes. Ian, of course, had that nightcap winner on Friday that at a big price, and I didn't absolutely. A lot of times when you see, you're not asking horsemen, for their pushes. You say how you fixed for the weekend or whatnot, but you're not. At least I don't. I'm sure some people do. But let's see. Friday. Yeah, New Year's Eve on Friday, of course. That was the Kitten's Joy that won the Edgewood. And then on Saturday, that Lady Rockstar we got to talk about. That was a nice performance. But then Centine winning the Turf Classic. And Brendan Walsh joins us now. You know, I'm not going to say, Brendan, that you were cold watering me on Thursday or Wednesday when I saw you, but you said, "Oh, we've got, you know, we got some decent chances. We could win a couple, or we could end up with nothing." But you ended up doing okay. Congratulations.
Thanks very much, Steve. Thank you.
I was telling everybody, you know, you don't. When you ask somebody about their weekend, or you know how it, the outlook, you're not looking for somebody to lean over and have you whisper, "Oh, be sure to bet New Year's Eve. She might be spent." You know, I'm not expecting that.
Uh-huh. No, I know, but yeah, you know, I mean, on paper, she was a 14 to 1 shot or whatever price she was, but you know, we had toyed with putting the blinkers on her for a little while. I can be a little slow to do it sometimes. I like to give them every chance, but you know, I think on the big day was the day to see if they were going to work, and thankfully they did, so it was great.
This race to me, the Edgewood, on a regular basis is, you know, ends up being productive, and this is usually an indication of a quality filly. I mean, talk about her a little bit. She did win at First Asking, going back to the end of the year last year as a 2-year-old, and she came from downtown to do it. I mean, that should have been really one indication. And it's not as if you were putting the blinkers on in desperation. I mean, you must have really thought something, because she only got beat in the Lacombe, in the Black Cat. She only got beat a length.
Yeah, and she, you know, she came out of nowhere the first time we ran her, Steve, and she surprised us. I'd say we probably were a little surprised. I mean, we thought she had some talent, but, you know, we thought she'd take a run or maybe two runs to break her maiden. So it's always a sign of a good one when they jump up and they get it done just out of natural ability. And then we ran her back the second time in a good field, and she managed to get it done there. We took a shot in the Lacombe. They came wide that day, for better ground, and a couple of fillies beat her. It was a bit of a muddling race, though. We did get stopped and bumped and every kind of thing that day. And, she'd been training good coming into this, Steve. You know, she'd been training on the dirt at Keeneland, and we brought her over. I worked her and my filly Twirl, the other filly we ran in the Edgewood, together right before, I think it was last Saturday. And she worked really, really, it was Sunday actually, and she worked really, really nice. Nothing fancy on the clock, because we didn't really ask for anything fancy, but her work before that as well was very good. So, you know, I kind of thought, yeah, the blinkers are definitely doing the trick with her. So that was what kind of made me a little, I was quietly confident, you know, confident that she could at least get a piece of it. And thankfully, you know, against a tough field, I mean, that was the other thing. I mean, there were some nice fillies in the race. So, you know, it was hard to be totally confident, but she definitely found a little more than what she threatened to find, and won quite comfortably in the end.
Well, there's a few things here, because you know, she actually was, Luis Saez kind of had her out on the turf course, and I do want you to talk about something, and it occurs to me to ask you, and I'm sure I'll discuss it with Chad Brown later, not today, but when we talk to Chad this week. What's your impression of the turf course so far? Because it was kind of notable when you look at the weekend, the charts in the turf races, Brendan, show these horses kind of spread out, which is unusual. And I'm wondering if the turf course itself has got something to do with it. What's your, you know, what are the jocks coming back and telling you, and what's your impression of the way these races are unfolding? I mean, we don't have a lot to go on. We've only got, you know, a handful of race days to, you know, to make any evaluation.
Well, I think the turf course, to me, Steve, it looks really good. I think we were unfortunate that we got a lot of rain on Friday. And I think as the weekend went on, we didn't intend really to go as wide as we ended up on New Year's Eve. But on Saturday, what was funny was, I ran a filly earlier in the day who came from off the pace, tipped out wide, Lady Rockstar, and won. And we felt that with Santon's draw as well, being drawn to 10, that we were possibly in a position to do something similar. It just seemed, like you say, that it was working for horses to come a little wide on the day. I don't know if the ground, because of the rain, was a little better outside or in the middle of the track. It looks like it might have been, or who knows? There's so many variables, and like you say, we haven't had an awful lot of racing on it. But I mean, my impression of the turf track there was that the layout of it now is fantastic. I think, everybody will agree that, it could do. I think once it gets a little more maturity and there's a better cover of grass on it, I think it's going to be as good a track as there'll be anywhere in the country. But, I do think that they were a little unlucky with the weather. We did get a lot of rain Friday. But I'm saying that the track does drain very well, because I walked out on it myself both mornings before racing, and I couldn't believe it. Saturday morning, it was actually a pretty decent track. It wasn't giving out from underneath them like it had possibly been in the past. So, but yeah, for sure, the winners are the horses that were finishing up better. A lot of them were coming wide,
And we can fold. Actually, I'm gonna pull out it, because Lady Rockstar is obviously gonna. This is a Frankel filly that's going places. Clipper Logistics, the owner, and then of course Godolphin's homebred Santine, a horse that we've talked about a lot this winter, is gonna win the Turf Classic before the Derby. For those of us that stuck with him after Fairgrounds, after two beaten favorite attempts, then he draws wide, and you think, oh, it's gonna be tough. He wins at 7-1. So hopefully people stuck with him. But what's interesting here, and what I'm including in this, Brendan, is the unusual chart margins. For instance, Santin and obviously Mira Mission, they dueled to the wire. It was then six lengths back to Adamo, three quarters to Sherl Spite, then three back to Tribuven, five back to Public Sector, three back to Busy Channel. You just don't see these margins in turf races. Usually, turf races at this level, everybody kind of finishes within, the three, five lengths of each other, and you get, much more of a bunched finish. Same thing in the allowance. Lady Rockstar wins three clear. Then Stepper and Ready Lady were ahead, separated by a head. It was, they were three and a half back. Then another length and a half back to the fourth place finisher, who dueled with Queen Bourbon, then another length and a quarter, then another four and a quarter, and then there was the race we just talked about with New Year's Eve. Chart margins of 2 3/4, 4 1/2, a half, a neck, then a 1 3/4, 6 1/4. It's just really unusual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more like a European type of a result. You see them strung out a little more in Europe.
Right.
In there, but I think it's just hard to draw a conclusion to it. Personally, I love the track because I had three winners on it, but I think we need to see a larger amount of races on it,
sure,
to fathom it out. And I do think too the rain may have had something to do with it. I think some horses didn't handle it great, especially later on Friday. I think there could be a lot said for that, but we're all always happy with a surface when we win on it, and I had my some horses ran below par as well, not so much on the turf, but You know, so I think we just have to see, you know, how it goes as they go forward and we get better weather and a bigger amount of races. And then I think we can draw to more conclusions.
Well, let's talk about what transpired in the other victories. Let's go to Santin and talk about saving his best for a grade one.
Yeah, you know, Steve, the horse last year, he was a late starter. He only made his first start last September. And we went to Indiana because, you know, we had no turf in September at Churchill. So we said we'd give him a start at Indiana, set him up for Keeneland. He won at Indiana. He won the A other then at Keeneland. Then we took a shot and brought him to California for the Hollywood Derby. He was drawn 14 of 14. I think if they had drawn the race before we went, we might not have shipped him out because I thought we were maybe dead in the water being drawn out there. But he got a fantastic ride. And he just got beat by a head. And, you know, we always thought the world of the horse. But after that, I thought, God, this horse is going to be really nice. And so we kind of drew up a plan to you know, try to win the race at Churchill on Derby Day. And the timing and the distances of the two races at the fairgrounds were really good because I don't know that he's been in love with the fairgrounds course. I think some horses really, really run well down there on it. Some of them don't. And he did run decent down there. You know, he was fourth first time out. He was only beaten a half a length. You know, only the fourth race of his life against really experienced horses, and I think he learned a lot. And then we came back in the Muniz, and he was second in the Muniz to a horse that, as we all know, when he gets out in the lead and gets a lead on his own, as he showed in Arlington last year as well, he's a very dangerous horse. So they weren't bad runs, but you know they were our prep runs, but this was our target all along, and you know. Thankfully, we worked him a couple of times and on the turf at Churchill before the race, and he seemed like he handled the track there really good, which is good for him because he does tend to handle a certain type of track better than he'll handle some others. But you know, thankfully he did, and it all worked out for him on Saturday. But I wasn't surprised at all because I've always held the horse in very high regard. He's still only run six times, so he's still an experienced horse. But I think he learned a lot the other day, and I think he's still learning a lot moving forward.
Well, it continues, of course, a remarkable run of success for Godolphin, literally worldwide, and not limited, obviously, to your Godolphin runners, but just operating at a scary high level. And this is a very nice addition. And in fact, daughter of Sentiero Italia, and this was her first foal. So Distorted Humor gets a posthumous, yet another grade one winner at this juncture. And who knows what else is, you know, what else is in the offing for him? What kind of you're going to work backwards from Breeders' Cup with him, but what other, you know, stops along the way do you think fit him, and what are his distance considerations? I mean, you've kept him at these mile and an eighth assignments. It feels like, you know, longer distances won't be a problem for him.
Yeah, no, he looks like he'd go a lot further, Steve. Even his gallop out the other day was pretty strong, you know. So I guess obviously all the obvious spots along the way. It's just a question of how much we spaced them out, really. But, you know, at least thankfully the plan for the first half of the year has materialized anyway. And, you know, I think we can pick our spots now and move along whatever suits the horse best and whatever's best for him. You know, you've got the Arlington Million, of course, at Churchill this year. He obviously like shown a liking for Churchill. I believe it's going the same distance as the other day, so I'm sure that'll be in the plans along the way, and you know, a few other races as well. But he seems like he takes his race as well, so you know, we'll see. We'll talk to the team at Godolphin and come up with a plan here, and hopefully in the next few days.
You don't have the half brother, right? The Warfront brother, Field Marshal. I think he's on the East Coast.
No, he is on the East Coast. I think maybe Billy Mott has him.
Okay. All right. Well, there's a couple of Warfronts. That's the 3-year-old Field Marshal, and then there's the 2-year-old this year is also, he's unnamed as of yet, and then there's a Spitestown filly. So she had Sentiero Italia had 3 colts. First the Distorted Humor, then the 2 Warfronts, and then there's a Spitestown filly that's a yearling now, and it doesn't look like she's got a reported drop yet in 2022. Sent in, and we were all kind of waiting for this win, and there it is. What about Lady Rockstar? A Frankel filly, a 4-year-old though, and you seemingly feel like you know, she's got some real upside in North America, you know, first try. William Haggis had her in the UK. And how soon does she get tested against top level competition?
I, to be honest with you, Steve, I thought she probably needed the race the other day. She's quite a big, strong, gross filly. You know, I thought she'd need it going a mile and 8 off a layoff. She didn't probably need it as much as I thought she was going to. You know, again, like we said earlier on, it's always nice when they jump up and surprise you a little bit like that. But we did think she was talented, and I know she was held in high regard in England. You know, she was progressive and progressed nicely along the way. But I thought she showed a nice turn of foot, so I think we've plenty to look forward to now, whether we might go back in the allowance race again at Churchill or whether we go straight into Stakes Company. We'll just see how she does here in the next while and see how she came out of the race. But she is exciting for the future, absolutely.
Lady Rockstar and Tyler Gaffalione, and Tyler had a nice weekend with you. You did mention that not everybody was a winner, but got to at least touch on a few. I suppose the I don't want to call it the biggest quote unquote disappointment. What happened with Prevalence? Because I think we all kind of were expecting that next step.
Yeah. You know, your guess is as good as mine right now, Steve. He came back fine out of it, thankfully. You know, we were in trouble early. My first impression is that maybe he didn't handle the track. I know it was drying out when he ran on Saturday. You know, he did run poorly at Churchill last year as well, you know, in the Pat Day Mile. Even though we did have an issue afterwards, which I don't think we have this time. You know, so I'm going to put it down to maybe, you know, not being comfortable on the surface for now, because he's come back fine, thankfully. So I think he's just one we have to, you know, maybe draw a line through it. And because he was training super going into it as well. He was doing really well, and he looked fantastic. You know, I'd put it down, you know, if you could put it down to opposition, you could, but it was almost too bad to be true. You know, so I think we just have to step back and see how he goes along the next few weeks. Like I said, he looks like he came out of the race fine. So we'll just have to see what happens and go from there. That's all we can do.
No, fair enough. And just like there's horses that are, you know, relish Churchill, there's like Rich Strike. There's horses that don't necessarily relish it. And in fact, before I ask you about the Learjet, what was your impression of the Derby?
I was totally surprised, which I'm sure everybody else was. I wasn't alone there. I just thought the race really did set up for a closer or a mind that bird type of result. They did go very, very fast early on. I thought the two horses that, were on everybody's, everybody's bets would have been Epicenter and Chad's horse Endman. So that wasn't a surprise. And then to see this horse come up from behind them all, but hats off to him. He came with a run and nobody was going to beat him on the day. So, hats off to the people that had him prepared. He was running on Polytrack all winter. Obviously, he'd won really easy when he ran on the dirt when he got clean. But, just total shock. I don't think until we see what happens in the next few races, are we ever going to really be able to get to have a proper estimation of why the result came up as it was. But, hats off to them people. They had the horse right on the day, and he definitely got the mile and a quarter out and out. And he was running at the end, so you can't knock that.
No, exactly. And that's one of the reasons the mile and a quarter is so fascinating, because, other than the horses that now, between the Louisiana Derby and the UAE Derby, the ones that get to go a mile and 3/16, all right, you're getting a read. And obviously Epicenter ran just a courageous and a winning race. He's the only one that stayed close to the pace that was there at the end. Everybody else, when you look at this chart, everybody else was positioned in the teens, literally, other than Epicenter. Everybody else was 11th or 10th through 19th, essentially, in that upper half of the chart when you look at it now. And the ones that were chasing the pace and setting the pace, they were anywhere from 13th to 20th. An absolute collapse except for Epicenter. So, I don't know if you saw it at that point when I was coming back up the tunnel back toward the paddock. Steve Asmussen was being interviewed, and he had a big smile on his face, Brendan, and he was telling Dave Grenig, and he was kind of shrugging and saying, what can you say? He said, my horse couldn't have run better, and we're so proud, but, we got beat in one of those kinds of results that makes this race so remarkable.
Yeah, no, I think everybody was taken aback. that's the beauty of the game, right? We never know what's down the line. That's why we all keep coming back.
Exactly. Let me ask you about the Learjet and where you go from here after the Twin Spires Turf Sprint on Friday.
He was a little disappointing too, Steve. He broke okay, kind of made a big early move and kind of flattened out. He might be a horse maybe wasn't in love with the track. I don't know. I think ultimately the horse, he probably needs more ground. He won gone 6.5 last year at Kentucky Downs, and his English form was over. Most of his form was over a little further. He's a kind of a difficult horse in Kentucky because he's an in-betweener, as we call him. He's probably a 6, 6.5, 7 horse, so it's hard with the configuration of the tracks. It's hard to find the right spots from here, so we'll see how he comes back out of this and come up with a plan, maybe, something like Presque Isle and the Poly, maybe New York, something a little further is probably what's going to really work for him. But he looks good after the race. He seems like he came out of it again. So hopefully we live to fight another day.
Exactly, and I do want to ask about Weyburn. I thought Weyburn had a look going into the Ali Sheba.
Yeah, he had been working really well, and had been getting over the track really well. He's probably, when you look at it, he's probably a one-turn horse, Steve, really. You know, even though he did run a really good race last year at Monmouth when he went down by a head to Mandaloon, going a mile at 16. But most of his better form, I think, is one turn. So we'll probably revert back to that as we go. That was a really good Ali Sheba the other day, too. But I did feel as though he was going to be pretty competitive. So, maybe he's one of these horses just needs to roll from the start. And he was traveling well and he didn't find what he threatened to find. But, that's the difference, too, between one-turn and two-turn horses. So I think we'll see him go back to like a one-turn mile or a 7/8, one-turn 7/8 race.
Well, there's the True North at Belmont or the Met.
Yeah, exactly. So there'll be plenty spots for him,
Nice.
He looks like he came back fine too, so we'll come up with a plan for him too here in the next little while.
Well, and a couple of the others we'll watch for. Lady Lake Lucerne will come back. My Filly Twist, she'll be back as well. And that race after the Derby, actually, that Rising Empire, I used prominently in that allowance. As well.
Yeah, he ran a nice race too, Steve. He got a little further back than what we planned early on, but made a nice move on the turn, and he didn't disgrace himself whatsoever. I thought he ran a good race, so I think we're in good shape with him. We'll try him back in a two other than a Churchill here, probably beginning of June, and go from there.
Well, and a couple of quick notes, finally, for those that were paying attention, or maybe not paying attention, through the early portion of the Derby Week action, you had two winners that both look like they've got upside yet. There was Bag Boss that won the allowance going 3/4, got a 90 buyer, and how about the Maiden Breaker going 1.25, Curbstone, an 85 buyer. Both that was another nice price that you put over.
Yeah, no, he kind of put people off. He ran a couple of nice races last year going a little further, Steve. And I think the last day we tried him, I thought he'd like the Bally track at Gulfstream, and he didn't. He ran deplorably bad. Didn't like it at all. That was kind of the only real blemish on his races so far. He did run a nice race at Keeneland last year on the front end when they came off the grass and ran second, was only beaten a couple of lengths. So I thought this race was either going to hit him right between the eyes or it wasn't. And Louis gave him a great ride to get out in the lead. Nobody took him on, and he looked like he could have went around there again. So that, I think he's a nice horse. He's actually a half brother to
Proctor's Ledge,
a good filly I had a few years ago. Yeah, which she didn't need all that ground, but this guy seems to. So I think no matter what the surface, he should be a nice horse going forward, going like 1.316, 1.25, maybe even a little further than that. So it's nice to. It's nice to have him. He belongs to Mrs. Mowley, who, as you know, has been a career-long supporter of mine. And it's great to maybe have potentially a good one for her again going forward.
Well, there's a race at 1.316 in 2 weeks.
You never know. We'll see how we do in between. You never know.
Is that a is he under consideration for the Preakness? You can out with it right here and now.
Absolutely not. No.
Why not?
Absolutely not.
Why not?
No, because he's a he's a horse just needs to be brought along bit by bit, and I think he'll be a nicer horse as he gets older. So no, I'm not going to throw him in at the deep end right now.
All right, all right. He's a street sense. He's out of the Archmare, Archstone, and Mrs. Mosley Homebred, of course. And on that front, we should mention, well, you maybe the one that's coming in behind Curbstone, the unnamed 2-year-old Gunrunner colt that she's got coming. Maybe that's the one that's going to get to the classics.
That one is actually not with me. He was
what?
Sold.
Oh,
he was sold. So he's not. But she is sending Proctor's Ledge to Maxfield this year, Steve. So we'll have something to look forward to. There'll be a conflict if she decides to sell that one. I think that's one we definitely have to hang on to.
Well, now I see why she went ahead. How about that? That one sold at Keeneland November. This is amazing. For $80,000, and then turned around and went last year at Fasig in the fall for $750,000.
Yeah. He turned out to turn into a beautiful horse.
Let's find out. We're going to have to find out. I'll dig that up. I'll dig up the, he was hip 870. All right. We'll find out where he is. We're going to keep tabs on that horse. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. What about today? You can, here's a chance to give everybody a winner. 12-1 for Mrs. Mosley, her Blame Filly.
No, I'm going to stop you right there, Steve. They're off the turf, but we're scratched. We're out of that spot, I'm afraid.
All right. So look for this one to come back. Her name is Accuse.
Yeah. And she'd been running on the poly track through the winter, and I think she'd be okay as she goes along. So we'll just have to try and find another spot for her on the grass.
Brendan Walsh, everybody. Bren P. Walsh on your Twitter machine. Another outstanding big weekend for the barn. And Brendan, always a pleasure to see you and to visit with you. Well done. Terrific Derby week for a lot of your clients. And lots of good things ahead here in the middle portion of the year.
Thanks very much, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Always great. Brendan Walsh, everybody. Let's take a break right here, and when we come back, we got about 45 minutes to fill out on our first Derby Oaks weekend recap. Usually takes much of the week. It'll stretch into probably Thursday. And when we come back, the other fabulous, sweet story. Jason Cook won the Knicks Go and absolutely had lots of handkerchiefs being pulled out in the winner's circle at Churchill Downs. 3 Technique, another claimant that won a race on the Derby card. It's not unusual for horses that are claimed to win on Derby Day. It's just not all that usual to have the Derby winner be a claimant. 3 Technique, though, Mr. Speaker, may end up as Mr. Speaker's best. Every sire gets at least one big horse. Very happy for Jason Cook and daughter Peyton. I think she's in school today. The kids had to go back to school. Not in Louisville. I think the Louisville kids are now out Thursday and Friday. Darren told me that, I think, that they're now getting off Thursday and Friday. Yeah, you don't have to worry about racing being, you know, popular or popularized in the Ville or cross state either in Lexington. It sounds like they're going to have a parade in Versailles for Eric Reed and Rich Strike. That's like the winner, the Cheltenham Gold Cup winner, right? Always goes back to whatever little burg, whatever little hamlet. take a timeout. Come back for hour three with Jason Cook and Rich Migliori. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting.